washing dessert plates in soapy water, listening to her high school sweetheart patter on about their future together. Earlier in the evening, their five adult children, 14 grandchildren, and assorted relatives had gathered at their modest home to celebrate Jim's homecoming. About 50 of them had squeezed inside the family room to eat cake, drink soda, and talk politics. George W. Bush was still president of the United States, but Senator Barack Obama was campaigning to become the next leader. Around 8 p.m., the last of the kids had left. Jim was now resting on the couch while his wife cleaned up. Frail but effusive, Jim was elated at the prospect of living long enough to watch his grandchildren grow up. "Remember when we beat cancer the first time?" he asked his wife. In 1998, they had learned that the disease was ravaging Jim's left lung. In a bid for life, he'd undergone surgery to remove part of his tumor-riddled organ. The operation had scared Jim so much he had quit smoking, and for nearly a decade had lived cancer-free. Then, in April 2007, the doctors had found two new lung nodules inside his body. Sharon had taken a leave from her job delivering mail to shuttle her husband to doctor's appointments, chemotherapy sessions, and blood transfusions. By August 2007, Jim was showing significant improvement, according to one report. Still, the oncologist had told Sharon that her husband would probably live only 6 months. She had accepted that fact, but not Jim. "We're going to beat this cancer again, honey," he said, his voice deep and steady. Sharon just smiled. She stood at the sink, her hands trawling the soapy basin for stray utensils. She retrieved a dish, sponged it off, and admired how her solitaire wedding ring still sparkled amid the iridescent bubbles. Suddenly, Jim fell silent. Sharon turned back to look at him and saw thick, dark blood oozing from his mouth. At first, she didn't understand. Jim coughed and struggled to breathe while Sharon waited for him to speak, but no words came out. Then Jim scooted to the edge of the couch, his eyes pleading for help. Sharon dropped the dish, reached for the telephone, and dialed 911. The emergency dispatch operator asked Sharon some questions. By then, blood was spurting out of Jim's mouth and nose, thick rivulets dripping down his chin. Sharon gave the operator her name, address, and telephone number, then cried, "My husband is bleeding and he can't talk!" Jim was now coughing up pieces of tumor and lung, according to a report filed later by the Anne Arundel County Police Department. Apparently, some of his tumor was lodged in his throat, choking him. Jim's eyes were bulging, and he tried desperately to breathe as blood poured down his chest. He grew so agitated that Sharon prayed for him to pass out, and mercifully he did. Sharon fell to the floor, too, and began administering CPR while the operator instructed her calmly from the speakerphone. Every time Sharon breathed into her husband's mouth, his warm blood gushed into her mouth. When she pushed on Jim's chest, more blood spurted from his nose. In no time, Sharon's face and white t-shirt were soaked in crimson, and her long, ash-brown hair was matted with clumps of red matter. She continued rhythmically breathing into Jim's lungs and pushing on his chest, while the operator guided her resuscitation efforts, the soothing telephone voice violently at odds with the gory scene. When the paramedics finally burst through the door, they found blood dripping from the walls and pooling on the floor. Sharon looked up from her husband's body, and the rescuers took over, measuring his vital signs. Sharon telephoned a family member for help, but after 20 minutes, the paramedics gave up. When Jim's son-in-law finally rushed into the room, ready to assist, he froze in horror. There lay his children's grandfather, a tube protruding from his gaping mouth, his death-dulled eyes wide open, his head encircled by a halo of blood, sputum, and malignant growths.